time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The American sports writer is not necessarily the most put-together individual. But
Pete Thamel.
They have bad cards right now. I'd love to play poker with the ACC right now. They have terrible cards.
With SI's Pat Forty.
If you're going to lose a rivalry game, by golly, then play the class card. They don't have as much class as we do.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And we got to get right to this story. Probably weren't aware that the Georgia Southern coach got fired, or why, or that Georgia Southern had a football coach. We don't know. But the video that emerged really is everything we want in college football. Here's the situation. Georgia Southern was set to play Louisiana, and they have a tradition where they ride school buses over to the football facility or something to get dressed. They're only, and they kind of have a little pep rally before they all get on the school buses and ride to the game.
We're talking like yellow school buses, like you took in elementary school, yeah. like green seats, the whole thing.
The Bluebird yeah. school bus, yeah. And as they're leaving, wherever they're going, I don't know, whatever, senior redshirt nose tackle Gavin Adcock decided to climb on top of the bus and surf it. And then as he's surfing in front of the crowd of Georgia Southern fanatics, cheering him on, hyping him up for the big Louisiana game, someone chucked him a beer. He catches it, and in a very athletic move, pops the top and chugs the beer while surfing the bus.
Yeah, it wasn't his first time.
The moving bus, yes, that he's on top of.
All hands team, Gavin Adcock should have been on the all hands team. Yeah.
Could recover their onside kicks. Yeah.
Needless to say, while we applaud it, at least I do, be careful on top of a bus. Not really maybe the best move. The administration was less excited about this video emerging of a student athlete literally drinking beer while surfing a team bus before the game. Before the game. Hard to, like, what's the argument when you're a coach? You go, well, see. Let me explain the situation.
You see, yes, for motivational purposes, we put our linemen up on top of the bus. And then, that's a little known tradition. We also have him chug a beer before the game, too. And then he plays. He did participate. Gavin Adcock did play.
Had a couple pops in him. Go out there and take on the Raging Cajuns. Can't imagine why they lost.
Why the coach was fired.
Gavin Adcock issued an apology to Eagle Nation. I want to reach out and express my deepest apology for my foolish actions on the bus this past Saturday. I want to apologize to the players, coaches present and before me who have paved the way for this great program and institution. This is a classic. Come out straight with your, you know, declare your thing, foolish, make an apology, then suck up to the people you're apologizing to.
Yep.
What I did was very selfish and is not what we are about here at Georgia Southern. Really? Coaching staff does not condone that behavior. For the remainder of my time here, I'll do everything in my power to reassure my love and commitment to this amazing place. Hail Southern. So, Gavin, that's like, remember that apology the UNLV quarterback had to make appearing on the Bravo reality show Below
for
Deck?
For eating sushi off the model?
Yeah, sushi off a nude model. That was the most disingenuous apology ever. You're a UNLV quarterback. You should be eating sushi wherever the hell you want. If you're any good, you would. Sorry, I'm 19 and this really hot chick showed up naked and offered us sushi. And I ate the sushi. Like, if that's the worst thing you did that night, I'll go to you. I'm sorry. I besmirched the morals of Las Vegas by eating sushi off a nude model on Bravo. Anyway. Pat, your thoughts on Busgate here?
Many thoughts. We discussed, first of all, the pod backstory here is that Pete, you know, who's always grinding, always working, while we were taping the Overreaction Monday podcast, had to stop to break the news of the coach getting fired. So we at least knew that much about it. And then we find out now this glorious additional detail. It is, I have motioned and I'm waiting for a majority decision here that we should like rename the, actually, I think Pete motioned it. Never mind. I can't even take his glory there of renaming the small sample Heisman, the Gavin Adcock, in favor, in honor of this man, surfing the bus, drinking the beer before the game, and then apologizing to Eagle Nation, which I assume probably has a single zip code in it. but like, this is like one of the great moments in pod history. It really is.
There's other people showering the bus with beer, too. They're spraying beer at the bus.
If this happened in a movie, if there was like some small college football movie like The Waterboy or whatever, and that scene was included, we'd all be like, there's no way a guy would crush a beer on the way to a game and then play. I don't believe it. Right?
On top of the bus.
On top of the bus. There's no way a nose tackle would catch, drink a beer while the bus is moving. No way.
He's got his feet wide. Good base. Yeah, got no problems with this. Man. I mean, he just hammers this thing down. No, he's wearing his number 57 jersey. That's trouble. Can't say it wasn't you.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of outed.
Yeah, maybe that's what they do during the redshirt year. You know,
he's wearing shades and has a tremendous mullet. This guy is fantastic. We need to sponsor him. Yeah. NIL deal.
We do.
Gavin Adcock.
That dude moves to the top of our like Bush Light six pack NIL sponsorship list.
My man Kayvon Pope is now in the transfer portal. I'm sure a lot of teams will be jumping to grab him.
Yeah.
They actually will. Like, I know. Pretty good player. Like, you think that's going to slow Akron down or whatever?
You quit in the middle of a game.
Forgiveness is directly proportional to need.
He's had a bad day. I can't wait for that. That's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It happens.
He's an emotional player. He's very passionate. His emotions got away from him. Yeah.
FUCC, Ohio State. Look, I applaud the guy. Still do. Whatever. All right. Well, that's it from Georgia Southern.
Very proud of Georgia Southern for making, not just making the show, but leading the show.
That's a good point. All right. I want to get to this. Atlantic Coast Conference. Things are not going so well. Two undefeated teams in the ACC. One of them is Wake Forest. The other is Boston College. They're both 4-0. Clemson, two losses. North Carolina, two losses. Miami, two losses. Virginia, two losses. I would think those would be the four teams. If you were going to say, who's going to win the ACC at the beginning of the year? Say Clemson. Well, no. And then you'd go with those other three, right? Probably yes. The next three favorites? No, they're not doing so well. The league is in, all due respect to Wake Forest and Boston College. Can they actually run the table here? Is this the year the ACC? Let me ask this question. Pat, who wins the ACC, and is there a snowball's chance in Miami that any of these teams make the playoff, or is this a year the ACC is like basically out?
There is no chance the ACC is making the playoff, because where are they going to get any good wins? I mean, they didn't have any good wins in the non-conference, unless we're going to say Pittsburgh beating Tennessee counts or Boston College beating Missouri counts. So, I mean, they've got no good wins and no good teams. I don't care if BC or Wake Forest is undefeated. I mean, maybe if they're undefeated, if they're 13-0, one of those two teams at the end of the day, but I don't see that happening. I mean, BC's going to be playing their backup quarterback the rest of the year. Wake Forest is, you know, making a lot out of what they've got, but I mean, Kenneth Walker might have been their best player. He left. He's at Michigan State now. I mean, good for them for being 4-0, and it's a pretty authoritative 4-0, but I mean, I guess I would say right now, why not favor Wake Forest? But they've got to show me they can hold up in the trenches for a full season. You know, Clemson has ragdolled them up front. I know this isn't the same Clemson, but still, I want to see them, you know, stand up to that. And they got North Carolina, North Carolina State. NC State really might be the team to beat as much as any there. But this league is O-U-T when it comes to the playoff. I did something in the 40-yard dash this week, ranking the conferences, and tried to make it really as data-driven as possible with pure numbers. And it's the Big Ten and SEC are way ahead of everybody else. Then the Big 12, and then there's a drop from the Big 12 to the ACC. And the ACC is a little bit ahead of, like, the Mountain West and the Pac-12 and the AAC, but not a lot. There ain't a lot of meat on that bone. So I just don't see that league being much of a factor the rest of the way this season.
So, Pat, do you think the ACC has a chance? I wasn't clear. could you maybe just drill down a little bit more and just make your point?
No good wins, no good teams.
That pretty much sums it up. So, as you know, we sort of revel in this podcast in just some of the inane and some of just, how would I best put this? Just some of the like the random mess that can come out of this sport. And right now, the ACC is a beautiful random mess. I'm ready to declare Wake Forest the favorite. Wake Forest has beaten NC State three of the past 4 years. They lost in Raleigh by a field goal last year. The game's in Winston-Salem. I mean, who would have thought that Wake going to Syracuse in 2 weeks would actually have like legitimate league ramifications on the line? Syracuse goes to, I believe, Florida State this week, where I haven't looked at the odds, but I would assume they're favored. So good for Wake Forest. Here's what talking to people a little bit this week about Wake has yielded is that their offense in Warren Ruggiero is sort of their nutty professor or offensive coordinator. They run kind of like delayed run game a little bit. Talking to a couple coaches about Wake this week, their offense is just like a step ahead of everybody right now. They had Florida State on a string. I mean, Florida State had no chance going up against them. And look, no team in the country, you could argue, has benefited more from the super senior than Wake Forest. Age is their competitive advantage. Dave Clawson was very clear about that. Going into the season, they really thought that they had an edge. And with everybody else mediocre and minus in the league, I mean, Clemson just quite frankly isn't very good right now, especially on offense. North Carolina just got mauled at Georgia Tech. It's not that they've lost twice. It's just they've kind of like lacked a pulse, and especially did in Atlanta the other night. So I think your Demon Deacons and podcast loyalist Dave Clawson are right now the ACC favorites, which I'm sure as he's listening to this, I talked to him for takeaways 2 weeks ago after the FSU win. I mean, Wake Forest beating Florida State by 21 didn't even like cause a ripple, which is the highest compliment you can ever make to Clawson, that like he's made Wake Forest beating Florida State like mundane. So give them a lot of credit. This is their Grobe year, right? This is their shot. Everything's aligned. Let's go Deeks.
Can they make the playoff?
I don't think they're gonna make the playoff. I mean, the ACC is going to have like a 3-loss champion. The ACC is not. Yeah, I want to be. Yeah, I did not say it as concisely as Pat, but I wrote it this weekend. The ACC doesn't really have a chance. I mean, we'd have to go full 2007 for. But I mean, Cincinnati and BYU are better positioned for the playoff than any ACC team right now. So I would have at least entertained BC if Phil Dracovic wasn't hurt. But I just have a really hard time seeing them run through with Dennis Gersell.
Yep. So obviously bitterness about the season so far at Carolina and Miami in particular. I think Virginia maybe a little less so. And then Clemson is straight up. Some of their fans are having a meltdown. You know, which I say there's only so long you can be like basically perfect. Things happen.
Right.
It's not your birthright, especially at Clemson. Coach William Christopher, you know, lay off him a little bit. You know, still may get Arch Manning and solve the whole problem, but we will see. If the ACC is likely out, that becomes a big thing. It certainly opens up some possibilities. We're going to get to Cincinnati in a minute and a couple other things. The Cincinnati Notre Dame game is sort of it's not a play-in game, but it's a knockout game for one of those two teams. So that one's going to be pretty interesting. But at the same time, on Wednesday, the playoff, one of these playoff groups is meeting to hash out the issues. Is this just another example of like, if you're the ACC, we went through it last week with the Big 12, like run to a deal. Like this is how easily you can just be eliminated. It's one thing to look and go, oh yeah, four is working great. You can become the Pac-12 real quick and be taken right out of interest. And this is why you need a path, not only so your champion gets in, but I think as a sport, so the idea that, you know what, Boston College can get in somehow, or Wake Forest can get in somehow. Just because you haven't been good for 10 years doesn't mean if you put together some really good season, you don't get a chance to play. And you know, it appears it's the bowl industry that's again getting in the way of this thing, both with the Rose Bowl demanding its own television contract and refusing to move off the 5 p.m., 5:30 Eastern kick so that the sun sets at the beginning of the third quarter, not the beginning of the fourth quarter, and wanting its own deal. And then all the other bowls saying, no, we want first round game action are two of the major hurdles. Again, I don't know why anyone listens to the bowl games. You know, it's an utter mystery. These ADs make a lot more money now than they used to, or getting a free set of golf clubs meant something, but here we are. But Patch, the ACC run at this, and what do we expect Wednesday out of this next meeting of the playoff?
Yeah, 100% they should run to expansion. Everybody really but the SEC should run toward expansion. I mean, even the Big Ten's been left out of this thing before. Somebody said Saturday, the ACC has been the Pac-12 plus Clemson for the past 7 years, you know? I mean, if they didn't have Clemson, they look a lot like the Pac-12s. And now Clemson doesn't look like Clemson has, and guess what? They look even more like the Pac-12s. So everybody that sits there in a tenuous position where the SEC is getting one bid and you're hoping you can get one of three, and maybe the SEC is going to get two bids and you're hoping you could get one out of two, then... If that's what your deal is every year, then you better say, sign me up for a bigger playoff and sign me up now.
The ACC is pretty interesting, right? Like, they have the worst television deal potentially in the history of college athletics right now. They are basically handcuffed, cement shoes until 2036. How are they going to create revenue? Well, how could they sit there with a straight face and be like, well, let's get shut out of the playoff. Let's not create revenue. Because we didn't like the process. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, they have bad cards right now. I'd love to play poker with the ACC right now. They have terrible cards. Jim Phillips inherited, like, a two of spades and a five of hearts. And he's got to go play poker with the big boys. It don't look good. So, I really do feel like as we move on and as this season becomes 2007 redo, and as we see some of these leagues get exposed for just not being very good, the pressure is really going to ratchet up week after week. It's going to be harder for them to kind of take a hard line against this playoff. My real belief is that rookie commissioner pushback, for lack of a better way to put it, is really just based on like them trying to dig their heels in a little and bond together some and legitimize their alliance. But the true obstacle is splitting the TV deal with ESPN and Fox, like we've talked about a bunch. And that's real. And I believe all that. All the other stuff, winterized stadium this and too many games that. Yeah, that's all hogwash. You can figure that out. And
posturing.
I mean, I'm waiting for, there's enough quiet sentiment to go tell the Rose Bowl to shove it. I don't know if that's the hill I want to die on right now, if I'm Kevin Warren or George Klyavkov. Like, but that's going to get a lot of noise. I just don't know. I don't know the reality of the Rose Bowl as obstruction. It's a fun thing to bring up, how real that is when the chips are really down, if the Rose Bowl has enough clout to really get in the way.
They're trying.
I know. Oh, yeah. I know.
All right. Let's get to a real beef here. Real fight. We like this. Bad blood in the iron skillet, right? The iron skillet. That's what they hand out between TCU and SMU. It's practical. You can make breakfast in it the next day. I mean, it's perfect,
one of the
right?
best trophies for Absolutely. That reason.
It's not just some massive, like, Paul Bunyan that you got to, like, carry. I mean, what do you do with
that? That's a vehicle for making bacon. It's perfect. I mean,
yeah, you can make a ribeye. You can make eggs. You can really go a good
eggs
iron
and
skillet.
Ribeye.
Yeah.
And
we're
ribeye
making along. Beef now, baby.
Well, there's a big, big anger between SMU and TCU, which there always is.
Yeah, it's great.
There was a scuffle. There was a kerfuffle. There was a scuffle. There was a fight after Saturday's game between the two programs in Fort Worth. And the issue, well, there was multiple issues, but mainly the SMU players tried to plant their flag at the middle of TCU Stadium. And, you know, that's just a no-no. And a fight erupted, and TCU special assistant Jerry Kill diagnosed with a concussion after getting knocked over twice during the fight, once by his own player. Coach Kill is fine, so that's good. Back at work. But Gary Patterson, the TCU coach, was not happy at all. Let's see. Here's some good quotes from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He pointed that it was all planned beforehand by the SMU program. You don't think it was planned? They had a media person from their offices out there filming the flag getting set in the middle of the field. Got to get your content. SMU football. It's okay, but don't tell me there wasn't a plan somewhere there. A guy got hurt. That's what I am upset about it. He got pushed down by one of our kids once on film in the middle of it, and he got hit because I've got proof to show it. At the end of the day, it was SMU, TCU. I can't substantiate it, but at the end of the day, it wouldn't have happened if we didn't have the flag situation. So we got the old, I mean, this is a classic. They've been fighting over flag plantings for a long time in college football. And then there was a separate thing where SMU football released sort of a mocking cover of a Gary Patterson country song that he wrote during COVID. If you recall this, you didn't know. Gary Patterson, to me, is only good at two things. That's coaching defense and wearing mock black turtlenecks.
And hitching up his khakis during a game. He's the all-time pant hitcher-upper in college football.
Okay, there's that, too. He is very good at that, got to admit. But he also has some musical styling. Sully, will you play the Gary Patterson song, Take a Step Back, that was a pro, like, let's rally the troops to fight COVID. So it had good meaning.
Take a step back. Take a look at your life. Hug your children. Kiss your wife. Know your neighbor. Leave the keys in your truck. Do yourself a favor. Try your luck. Take a step back.
Take a step back.
Take a step back.
Take a step back.
Everybody stop, we're at. Take a step
back. Is Gary Patterson singing?
Yeah, Gary does some singing. He's done some singing over the years. Yeah, right. There's been a couple, like, that kind of features on Gary and his little musical affinity.
I mean, not terror. It's very country. No. They mentioned a pickup truck in the second line. I mean, that's like that. Isn't that the rule? You got to, basically, they're out there doing Applebee's jingles as country music songs these days. Merle Haggard would just wants to cry at what happened to country music. Let's make
Merle Haggard would renounce the genre now.
Well, whatever. So then SMU football said they took a step back and released a little 30-second cover video mocking TCU after the defeat. Gary was not happy about that at all. They hate you because they take a song that you wrote about COVID and getting back to families, and they make fun of you. If I had the time, I'd go out and get all the copyright laws and I'd get after their ass. But I've got the Longhorns on my mind now, not them. I'm glad they keep substantiating our existence of where we're at and how we do things.
Gary Patterson has clearly reached that rare level of, like, Jim Boeheim, I don't care. And I will just say whatever is on my mind, and I will have no repercussions because there's a statue of me, and I can sound like as big of an idiot as possible, and I know that nobody's going to say, hey, Gary, tone it down. So, I mean, this, like, I love the Fort Worth Star-Telegram article Dan just referenced. That, like, God bless the writer. He didn't have to write anything. It's just Gary. It's like rants.
Let him go.
Short transition, rants. Like, just, it completely makes no sense. Flag planting conspiracies and social media nonsense. Win the game, Gary. Win the game. Just stop.
Is there really a copyright infringement on that song? I mean,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not exactly Hey Jude, man. Like, you know.
If you remember,
good.
Like, go back to when Baylor was rolling hot and would beat TCU. Gary would have a little meltdown like this after they would lose to Baylor, and Gary would rail about the lack of class, you know, or cheap shots or something. He would find some reason to be mad at Baylor, and you know that this is. I mean, football in Texas. But that substrata beneath Texas and Texas A&M, where they all just backbite each other, you know, SMU, TCU, vicious. Baylor, Texas Tech, Houston. Oh, it's phenomenal. I did a little engagement in Fort Worth back in August, and I did ask for a show of hands for people. How many are Texas fans? And it was about
a third of the room, and then I said, how many of you hate the Texas fans? And the other two-thirds shot their hands up immediately. But amongst that two-thirds, it was like, oh, the TCU guys and the SMU guys were taking shots at each other. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I do have to say, football in Texas, they embrace the petty, and they get insulted by the petty when they're on the wrong end of the petty.
They're a bunch of Bravo housewives, and Gary Patterson is a Kardashian. That's what this is, right? He's the biggest drama queen of a bunch of infighting drama queens.
I was upset.
I feel bad for Jerry Kill. That guy's had a lot going against him. But like one of his own players did half the damage. The article, this Fort Worth Telegram article is a gem. We could have just analyzed this article, the entire podcast. But at one point he said there's something to the effect of like Patterson wouldn't confirm his own player did it.
Yeah, he's looking at the all 22 and trying to figure it out. Right. I was upset at our guys for fighting, but then, like I told them on Sunday in our team meeting, I was proud of them. The bottom line to it is that that's what you're supposed to do at the end of the day. You're supposed to defend what we've all worked for and what we do and how we do things. And I would expect, if my kids acted that way at SMU, I would expect them to act the same way if they tried to do it at their stadium. Don't tell me you don't know the plan. That's all I'm going to say to you. Don't. He goes on for about five more paragraphs. Don't tell me within your office, your coaches, you don't know a media person is going to go over there and video a flag being planted. Don't tell me that nobody knows what's going on, all that stuff going on. You want to hate us because we won? Hate us. That's a good thing.
That's like the kind of rant that a coach would make before the internet and YouTube, and it would just be like a little fodder for the beat writer, and it would go away.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Never change, Gary. Keep on Kardashian. Keep it on.
You know what?
SMU won 42-34.
If you're going to lose a rivalry game, by golly, then play the class card. They don't have as much class as we do.
We love the petty on this podcast. Yeah. We embrace the petty. We encourage the petty. This is like the standard bearer for petty.
Two huge games in the SEC this weekend. There's a few others. Actually, pretty interesting SEC. But let's chat about these. Let's go right to number 12 Ole Miss at number 1 Alabama. Lane Kiffin is out there trolling all week, different things. He's fired up. His game is on. Huge matchup. This was a fireworks show last time. Ole Miss, you know, was able to stay in it with them. I actually think both teams' defenses are better this year, and I would not expect that many. It's just to be a track meet. But I think Ole Miss is dangerous for Alabama because I think Ole Miss is going to score some points, and we've seen from Alabama so far that they can do it. There's no reason for concern, but you still have to do it. Pat, what are your thoughts? We're going to pick the games, of course, later in the week on the Race for the Case. But your thoughts on this entire scene and how big of a game this is and how quickly Lane Kiffin has brought a program that was reeling when he took over back to real prominence.
Yeah, super impressive. You know what? I mean, he was smart to take that job because he had a quarterback there in Matt Corral. He actually had two of them, him and John Reese Plumlee, and they've made Plumlee more of a receiver now because Corral is too good to get out of there. So he had that. He's like, I can build an offense, all right? And then after a bad year defensively, now they've improved on that side of the ball significantly so far. I think this could end up being a track meet. I really do. I think both teams are going to be able to exploit the other defensively. And this is the game, like, if you're Lane Kiffin and he's out these like tweeting things from the Dalai Lama, I mean, like, the mind games are just going to be endless from him this week. He thinks about, this is my guess, he thinks about Alabama and or the Egg Bowl 50 weeks of the year, at least a little bit, maybe 51, you know, and like he takes 1 week off maybe in the spring from not thinking about Alabama and how I can stick it to Saban and if there's any way I can beat Saban. So they will be as prepared as humanly possible. That's not to say Alabama won't be, but you want to talk about a game that's been circled, at least in the mind of the head coach, all offseason? This is it. I expect it to be really good. Looking forward to it. I mean, this should be high, high entertainment, I think. And even, you know, it's a new coaching staff, new regime and everything, but the one team that caused Nick Saban as much consternation as anybody other than Auburn under Gus was Ole Miss under Hugh. Nick Saban does not like losing to Ole Miss, and he did it twice, back-to-back, 14 and 15.
Yeah, I think, you know, to go back to Lane from the macro, I think he was smart to take the Ole Miss job because Ole Miss was going to embrace Lane for his full laneness. They were going to embrace all his petty, all his warts, all his... Oh my God, I can't help myself. Is that a phrase? Like the all the tweets, the Ole Miss fan base beaten down by the NCAA, beaten down by being sort of a second tier SEC West team for so long, has embraced Lane's sort of inner provocateur. They have risen together right from that Lane Train video that they released when they hired him in the middle of FAU winning Conference USA's championship, if you remember that. All the way through. But God bless Lane. He's kind of found himself, right? Like found a place where he can be himself. He runs an unbelievable offense. They have they have really good players. DJ Durkin's done a nice job sort of taking that defense from like completely hapless and putrid to just generally bad, right? Like that was a huge step up for them to just be like a mediocre to bad defense. It was a giant step forward for Ole Miss. And look, like Lane, you know, runs the kind of offense where you're never going to have a Army's defensive numbers, right? With the tempo they play at and everything. So yeah, I was surprised the line was as big as it is. And I guess the game is in Tuscaloosa, but I really think Lane's going to give this Alabama defense some fits. I mean, they did last year when Bama had some more talent. We'll pick the game in the race later in the week, but this is prime Lane time right now. And he's embracing it all. And I mean, shoot, that game is going to do a huge number. Lane is his own, you know, Lane almost transcends Ole Miss in a lot of ways, just with what he's become. So God bless him. And if Ole Miss jumps up 14-0 in that game, the entire college football world is going to be on the edge of their seat the rest of the afternoon.
Here's Lane Kiffin on Twitter this week. This is a quick rundown, basically. Tweets somewhat angrily, or at least disappointingly, at game day not coming to the Alabama game. They're going to the Arkansas-Georgia game. So he trolls them. Congratulations, Eli Manning, on his getting his number retired by the Giants. There's a Bible verse, recruiting stuff where he's flying around. A picture, a video of the fans in Alabama singing Dixieland Delight, okay? A random story that says Lane Kiffin has a chance to beat Saban, which he then declares so much rat poison. a T-shirt that makes fun of him. There's a couple other things. A video of his son, Knox, walking through the grove that kind of looks like he's staring at a bunch of girls. Then more congratulations to Eli Manning. Someone else doing, I love the Manning family because of the Manning cast. Twice he retweets that and says, me too. Everything's about the Mannings, of course, and mm-hmm. Arch Manning.
And don't forget, speaking of Arch Manning, he only follows Arch Manning on Instagram.
Instagram. And then he asked Katy Perry to come to the game Saturday. Like that, this is, this is the head coach.
And the Dalai Lama, all of that. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Where was the Dalai Lama in there?
It was like Monday. It was like, let's, you know, don't be angry. Don't spend your time
angry. Right. A quote of Dalai Lama, and then he brags about he once let Sebastian Janikowski attempt a 76-yard field goal when he was with the Raiders, which did not succeed, and then he was fired 2 days later. That was one of the great.
You love that, Dan. Anyway. You love that 76-yard field goal. That was one of my favorite things. Yes.
At the end of the half, take the 76-yarder. 76? Are you kidding me? Great times. All right. The other big SEC game that is now, I know we all had circled before the season, is Arkansas at Georgia. I mean, look, at this point, Arkansas has got a better resume than Georgia. I don't know if they got a better team. We did not think Georgia was going to have a whole lot of interesting games this year. Now you got this one and the cocktail party. Thoughts on whether the Hogs can keep the magic up?
I mean, there's nothing to point to with Arkansas and say, it's fake, it's fraud. I mean, it's solid. Their wins have been thorough. You know, they beat the crap out of Texas. They handled A&M easily. They have not allowed a point in the first quarter this season. Barry Odom, as Pete alluded to on the previous pod, you know, like a great defensive coordinator who's doing great work. They're physical. They're making big plays. KJ Jefferson's been better than I thought he would be throwing the ball. Been able to hit some downfield throws. They've got some game-breaking talent. And then defensively, they're hitting people. They are solid. Now, I think they're about to run up against the defense, and I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to do much offensively against them. But up to this point, look, Arkansas belongs where they are, if not higher in the rankings, and belongs in this game be as a big game, you know, opponent for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a place where you would worry about someone matching up with Georgia, it would be on the lines, right? Georgia's obviously, especially their defensive line, is elite. Georgia's offensive line is just okay, I think. But, like, their defensive line and their defensive front is as good in the sport as there is right now. But Arkansas has gone toe-to-toe with one mediocre program in the Big 12 and then one high-end SEC program that was supposed to have a very good defensive front, and they did not flinch. So I have no reason to think that they're going to flinch on the road. Arkansas has not played a true road game, correct? The Texas game was home. They did play a neutral site game at Jerry World. I'm still like a pinch scarred standing on the sideline with Cincinnati the other day and then just seeing some teams go on the road and just totally melt, that maybe there is like a little bit of a difference. Maybe their operation changes, but they're solid. Yeah, I think that game is going to be ugly and low scoring. And, you know, nobody loves to win a game 14-3 like Kirby Smart. So that I have not decided who I'm going to pick yet, but that game is not going to be aesthetically pleasing. It will be a game for the grump.
All right. The other big one, Notre Dame hosting Cincinnati. Again, we'll pick all these later in the week and race for the case. This is Cincinnati's big moment. They win this game. They're still in this running. We already mentioned the ACC's in trouble. It takes out one. Certainly the pack of the Big 12 does not. We'll see what Oklahoma can still do if they can run it. But at this point, you'd need Oklahoma. I think Baylor's undefeated. Oklahoma State's undefeated and actually looking decent too. But you'd need an undefeated team probably out of that league. So there's possibilities here. Also, Notre Dame gets by Cincinnati. You know, who knows? Nobody thinks it's a great team, but they can win all their games. And that would certainly be an interesting one. So, Pete, let's start with you. I know you got a lot on Cincinnati. Thoughts on this weekend, just what this game means in terms of, you know, not necessarily who's going to win, but just what it means for these two programs.
Sure. And I got a story running Tuesday afternoon on Yahoo where I spent 6 days with the Bearcats and really dialed into all this. But I think the thing that's most striking, Dan, for Cincinnati to have this moment being favored at Notre Dame is how much stuff had to come together, the confluence of different things for Cincinnati to have this moment. Luke Fickell needed to stay. Desmond Ridder needed to come back. They needed to have a big season last year to be put in position to do this. They needed to, you know, they played really well against Georgia. Georgia hit a go-ahead 50-something-yard field goal with 3 seconds left to win that game. They led Georgia by double digits going into the fourth quarter, which in a lot of ways validated Cincinnati as a contender more so than winning the AAC and going undefeated last year. So all of these things lined up. They needed to have scheduled, you know, you schedule these, what, 8 years in advance or whatever. You need to have scheduled the game at Indiana. Indiana had to be good for the first time in, you know, a century. Then they had to go there and win, and despite playing poorly for much of the first half, win pretty impressively at the end of the day. They won by 2 touchdowns. So this is Cincinnati's moment where this all these cosmic things had to align for them to have it. Now, they are in the Big 12, and they are showing that they could really be a contender. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if 5 years from now, Cincinnati and Central Florida are the two best programs in the Big 12. Like, would that really shock anyone, considering the natural resources, especially if they can keep Fickell? Probably the most interesting thing in that story was Fickell saying to me that the Big 12 is really energizing for him. Like, the reason he has stayed at Cincinnati is he felt like he could continue to improve it. This is an opportunity for Cincinnati to continue to improve. And he did not mince words that it's incumbent on Cincinnati's administration put up facilities and give the support needed for Cincinnati to continue to grow. And that would certainly be incentivize him to stay there. It's a really unique situation. He could have gone to Michigan State, bunch of SEC teams called with some of those bad jobs, no offense, Sully, that opened the past couple of years, and he has stuck around. The school has now risen to a level where he could kind of keep going and maybe not leave unless it's an elite Notre Dame, Ohio State, Penn State kind of a job where Cincinnati is. So it was an exciting kind of time to be around that program. It was fun to see them build to this moment. I mean, the big storyline kind of locally will be Marcus Freeman, the really talented young defensive coordinator, left Cincinnati to go to Notre Dame. They essentially tripled his salary, right? Like, I mean, they really paid a ton of money to get him. And that's the drawback at Cincinnati is you can't defy gravity forever. Well, now they got Big 12 money coming in. Now that they can maybe afford facilities, maybe you can become the second high-end Ohio team in the sport. I mean, there's certainly enough talent around there to support that. So really interesting moment in time for Cincinnati. And the other confluence, and I'll stop rambling here, is that the seas have parted in front of them, right? Clemson, for the first time in 6 years, isn't going to make the playoff. Ohio State's defense is a bucket of average, to be polite. The teams that we count to make the playoff and compete for the playoff really aren't there. So it's sort of like the Red Sea has parted for the Bearcats right now. And I mean, this is their moment. They need to seize the moment. They need to command the moment and really go put on a show. And if they do, I think, you know, they finished, the highest they got was seventh in the CFP last year. And then they got bumped, a 2-loss team and a 3-loss team, and finished ninth in the final standings before they lost in the bowl game. So an undefeated team was getting jumped by two teams with multiple losses. There was a glass ceiling put very distinctly on Cincinnati by the jalapeno cream corn set there in at the Grapevine Marriott or wherever they stay. So the road, though, this season is a lot wider for Cincinnati to creep up, and they need a definitive statement on Saturday to seize the moment.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, I think that this is a super intriguing game. I mean, think about the fact that Cincinnati is going to play undefeated Notre Dame in Notre Dame Stadium, and Cincinnati is favored. That would never have happened in the history of football before, I feel confident in saying. But this year, 4-0 Notre Dame doesn't look that great, and 4-0 Cincinnati, 3-0 Cincinnati, they've had an off week, is getting a lot of respect that they earned over years of building, to Pete's point, of stockpiling talent, of retaining your star coach and having this chance. And so, you know, they go into this absolutely with a great shot to win what could be one of the biggest victories in school history and put themselves squarely in playoff contention. As Pete mentioned, obviously Clemson and the ACC, we pretty well think is out of the playoff. Ohio State has a home loss on its resume. We'll see what happens with the rest of the Big Ten. Big 12 has been lackluster. Pac-12 lackluster, unless Oregon runs the table. So the opportunity is there like it's rarely been. One quick thought on Cincinnati and the facilities. And yes, if you are Luke Fickell, you push for everything right now. This is your chance to push for it. Cincinnati may just have to say, I don't know how, but we'll figure it out. But there's no place in that footprint to put anything. You know, we've been there to that school. It's a neat little campus with a very cool little stadium, but it is all wedged into this very small urban area. If they're going to build something, I don't know where the hell they're putting it. You know, if you got to put everybody on a bus to go to a new facility or something for practice, that might be the case. But still, it's one of those moments where if you're Cincinnati, you say, we'll figure it out.
We got to get to Fat Bear Week, guys. Yes. Remember last. This is a tradition on the pod. The Katmai National Park and Preserve in Alaska sponsors Fat Bear Week, where we have the contenders, which bears have gotten fattest over the summer for the hibernation. And then they have the fans of Fat Bear Week vote on their website. The website is explore.org/fat-bear-week. I won Fat Bear Week last year by picking the right winner, 747. 747 was the champ last year. And I think this should be a keeper draft. I don't think I should have to give up.
No. This is not a keeper draft.
You're just going to draft my guy. You can't draft my guy. You went with like Walker or something.
Yeah, Walker, first of all. The amount of corruption that's gone into Fat Bear Week on this podcast, you wanted the vote to matter for the race for the case.
Yes. Dan was scuffling last season early in the year, and he tried to make the Fat Bear contest count for the race for the case.
Whatever. And now he wants it to be a keeper league. Forget it.
That's an all-time low podcast moment, even for you, Dan.
You can't steal my 747, my beloved brother in arms up there.
We're going to vote in alphabetical order, right? 40 Sullivan Famel Wetzel.
First name. Whatever. You guys, that's low dog stuff. That's all I'm saying. All right. We have some contenders. 32 Chunk. 128 is Grazer. Number 131 doesn't have a name. Spring Cub, Walker, Holly. Holly, we always like her. She was a finalist, wasn't she, last year?
I believe Holly lost in the final last year to 747.
Yeah. Otis, Popeye, 747, 812, 503. It's a couple of just, I don't know why. Well, 747 doesn't need a name. That is his name. Anyway, pick your bear, and I'll read some of the details about that bear. And don't take my bear. Hey, Pat.
Look, I'm just going by the pictures this year, and I think 747 is beatable. I don't think he had a great year at the dining table. You know, I picked poorly with Chunk last year. Chunk didn't come through for me. I want Walker, just with the absolute massive rear end on Walker. I'm taking him. Him, her, whatever the case. Large adult male. Him.
That's a big boy right there, man. Walker is a big old thing.
Yep. No question. Give me Walker.
Estimated to weigh 1,000 pounds in last year. Appears to be larger this year.
Yeah, baby.
All right.
That's my boy.
All right. He's a frequent user of Brooks Falls. He prefers to fish in the far pool. All right.
There you go.
Sully, you want to make your pick?
I'm going with a grizzled veteran here. He looked pretty slender in this picture from July, but woo boy, has he put on some weight. The write-up says he has a relatively high salmon catch rate as a result. He won the inaugural Fat Bear contest in 2014 and was also a champion in 16 and 17. I'm going with my man, Otis. Yeah.
Otis was slim on July 26th, according to this picture.
He looks grim there. Yeah, I'd be worried about him in July.
My bear doesn't have a name, but I think I want Big 503. Or maybe I should take Popeye. And
that's the
chicken.
Cincinnati. You're a big Cincinnati guy. You take the 503.
Yeah, 503 is Portland. 503 is Portland. 513 is Cincinnati.
Oops.
All right, I know. I'm taking 747. Who am I kidding?
Look
at 747. That thing makes our Georgia Southern nose tackle look like an Instagram model. I mean, the 747 is just massive. I mean, he's been around since 2004. He's a skilled and efficient angler, according to the bio. Yeah.
It's my bear. That's like you like stealing Gary Patterson's song. I'm going to get copyright on your ass like Gary Patterson. I'm going to go with... I don't know. I was going to go with, I guess, Popeye, but I'm not going to do that. Hell, I'll go with Miss Holly. Screw it. Miss Holly, not afraid. Show some girth. Just blonde ears, blonde fur, and a pale tan-colored claws. By early autumn, she's usually very fat. I love this. All right, I'm taking Holly. We're going to win it. Holly's coming back for the victory.
We'll see. She was the 2019 winner, so she's got it in her arsenal. I do think that experience, too, of getting through the bracket helps you the next time around, you know, future years.
It is true. She's like Gonzaga. She's knocking at the door.
Exactly, you know?
Yeah. All right. We have all spent some time in press boxes through the years, many press boxes. This story popped up. Many people sent it to us. It comes from Pleasant Grove, Alabama. Police in Alabama say a man was discovered last week sleeping in a high school press box in a pile of chicken fingers and meth.
So many questions. So many questions.
37-year-old Matthew Williamson was charged with unlawful breaking and entering a vehicle and theft of property. He was transported to Jefferson County Jail, stole a car in Hueytown, and then hid it in Pleasant Grove. The funny part is there was a report of an unknown person breaking into the concession stand of the Pleasant Grove Athletic Department. The next morning, police really hustling over there. The next morning, Williamson was found sleeping in the press box amid a pile of chicken fingers, chips, candy, and meth. Pat, what were you doing on September 20th? Where are your whereabouts?
I've seen some messy things in press boxes before. I cannot say that I have seen a pile of meth in the press box. I don't know
what a pile of meth would look like.
No, I don't. I can't say either. I don't know. This may be the new press box low. This was press box lore that I was told happened. I did not witness this personally, but supposedly, allegedly, a game in the swamp, a night game between an SEC team and Florida, where the other SEC team was pounded into submission. And between the third and fourth quarters, one of the beat writers for the visiting team, who apparently was hammered drunk during the game, allegedly was urinating on the wall between the urinals. He was not in front of an actual urinal, but he was putting it elsewhere. So that was the previous low for press box behavior. I think adding meth to the occasion here makes this the new low.
Meth makes Matthew everything Williamson? Better.
Was it Matthew Williamson? Because that guy, yeah.
I have no comment. No, it was not. It was not this guy. It was not the guy who's allegedly involved here. But I can't confirm the story, so I won't name names. It's a good story, though.
I think I know who that story is about. I will not.
That's probably not that hard to figure out in our business.
Yeah, I will not. I will not chirp. But so I was disappointed that the chicken fingers were potentially stolen from the concession stands. I wanted our guy to have like gone through and bought from Raising Cane's, from Popeye. I wanted him to like have a stake in the chicken war. I wanted a declaration in the chicken war. And Sully, our very high intellect group text was going back and forth about this. Might have even been some Twitter chatter. Sully theorized that they were just chicken fingers from there. Imagine that. Really want to have chicken fingers and they're frozen. Whew, that'd be a bummer.
A million questions. I mean, one is do you have to get to Pleasant Grove to hide out in a press box so badly that you need to steal a car to get there?
Yeah, if you're going to steal a car, you might want to end up somewhere else. I don't know.
There's got to be some pretty good chicken fingers.
He stole a car in Hueytown, Alabama.
Like Jameis Winston's hometown.
Jameis Winston's hometown. Do they not have a press box you could pass out in?
I mean, you would think.
You could smoke some meth. Why? Now, it's only a couple miles to Pleasant Grove. That's another. Like, you're going to go to prison because you were too lazy to walk like 4 miles. From Hueytown to Pleasant Grove.
Little disappointed our friends at AL.com, and we love AL.com. They do a great job. Little disappointed they haven't dug up a few more details for us here. The people need
to
know.
That's true. They usually seize these sort of opportunities.
Yes, they see a good viral story and they flood the zone.
Yeah. Steal the car and head to California. I don't know. Steal the car. Like, I got to see my girlfriend. Something. Like, you
Gulf
stole
of Mexico,
a car.
Yeah.
Also, you could break in and get, like, probably frozen, uncooked chicken fingers, candy, and smoke meth in a high school press box. I'm just confused.
I'll give the guy credit. I think he was smart enough to think baseball press box because it's not baseball season. Who's going to look for him? He might have had, you know, months on the lam in there until they start baseball season. You know,
there's nobody looking around a high school. Yeah. Like, they just, no one's concerned when, do you see the picture of this guy?
Oh, I saw the picture. Yeah.
I mean, look, the press, the American sports writer is not necessarily the most put together individual. But we ain't that bad.
Right. This would be a new paragon even for our profession.
Yeah. We're not paragons of fitness or fashion, but we don't look like that.
Yeah, we're doing a little. At least most of us are not on meth. All right. One last bit before we remember, we'll be around Thursday. Great review on our. Please review our podcast. It was a great review. Listen to every episode. This is on our reviews. This pod is my guilty pleasure, and I say that as a preacher. Always a little scary when men of the cloth or women of the cloth are listening. I got to keep myself on the rails here. Still trying to get the host to become Presbyterian. If Dan ever shows up to the church I serve, I'll put Bush Light in his communion cup.
And it's a strong offer.
Yeah, strong if we have some new listeners, when Kevin Kelly took the Presbyterian job, we were so excited that Dan pondered conversion. And then we heard a bunch from our different Presbyterian listeners. We welcome listeners of all cloth. And yes, but this guy threw down the gauntlet. I mean, I almost think Dan, and where is he from? It's like Georgia, like Sandy Springs, Georgia.
Sandy Springs.
Yeah, isn't that like the fictional place, Dan, where you like think every quarterback's from? Isn't that like your?
Yeah,
that's like. Don't you just say it must be from Sandy Springs? Yeah, he's a 2023 prospect from Sandy Springs. Yeah, no, I mean
I could go to Sandy Springs and drink Bush Light on Sunday morning in the Communion Cup. Yeah. I mean, this is a real offer. You know,
is this a committable offer? Like this isn't just like we're spraying it out because Troy offered him and George Southern offered him. If this is a committable offer, we have to talk here. You're gonna get your 7-on-7 coach on this, Dan.
You know, I might have to. All right, we'll be back later this week with our picks in the race for the case. Appreciate everyone listening. Talk to you later.